I'd like to welcome you all here today. For those of you who I don't know, my name is John Alterman. I run the Middle East program here. As we start, I just want to wish our guests a Ramadan Kareem, a Chag Sameach, and I'm sorry there's not a Christian holiday, but I'm sure there will be soon. We are privileged to be hearing today from a visiting fellow in the Middle East program, Fadis Brezat. Fadis comes to us from the Center for Strategic Studies in Jordan, where he heads the polling unit. Fadis is one of the rising pollsters in the Middle East as polling becomes increasingly complex and increasingly sophisticated in the Middle East. Fadis is on the cutting edge of that trend. He was trained in political science at the University of Kent, where he got his MA. He also studied in Sweden and got his BA in Jordan at the University of Mota. He is in the States for a year on an American Political Science Association Fulbright Fellowship. We were delighted to grab him at the beginning of his tour. He's been with us for a few months. I think we have a little more than a month of him left before he'll wait for the dust to settle on Capitol Hill and then move into a congressional office. Fadis is going to talk to us about some very interesting conclusions he's reached from looking at polling data about attitudes toward extremism and violence in the Middle East. He's teased out, I think, some very, very interesting findings, and he looks forward to sharing with you. Fadis will talk for about 20, 25 minutes, and then we'll open up the floor to questions. So with that, I give you Fadis.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Before I start, I would like to thank the CSIS for being great hosts here in D.C., and I would like to thank the Middle East Program, John, Haim, Chris, and the others. My talk today will be about Arab public opinion and perceptions of violence. What is changing? Before I offer the evidence that I have gathered so far on my thesis, I would like to acknowledge that I've used data from various sources, the Center for Strategic Studies at the University of Jordan, our own data, also data from Statistics Lebanon in Beirut, data from Ibn Khaldun Center in Cairo, and other data from the Arab Barometer, which is being conducted now in five Arab countries. We have data from three countries so far, Kuwait, Jordan, and Palestine. And I would like to acknowledge also the World Value Survey, which I have used a lot of data from their data set. My talk will be centered around three main ideas: diminishing support for violence and violent groups in the Middle East, and then supporting other people's radicals. Why is that happening, and what is the trend there? And then implications. What are the implications for regimes in the region and for movements themselves? The main thesis, basically, that there is a process of a gradual delegitimization of violent movements and violent tactics. And that gradual delegitimization of movements and violent tactics is actually making Arab public opinion increasingly uncomfortable with these movements and their tactics. The public in the region, generally speaking, are growing more radical. And this is a thesis that have been presented in many circles, whether in the academia or journalism or intelligence circles even, in response to current U.S. and Israeli policies in the region. However, majorities in Arab countries, while disagreeing with the policies of the United States and Israel, this does not automatically translate into radicalization of the publics. Some elements in the public are amenable to go to the extremes, but the majority, despite rejection of policies, maybe will not go that road. There is a paradox, actually, in the Arab public opinion that we have uncovered, and that paradox basically more disagreement within the broader Arab public opinion with these policies. And at the same time, we witness a increasing delegitimization of militant groups and their tactics, and also in their own countries, like in Palestine, in Lebanon, Jordan, Iraq. We will go through the evidence shortly. But before that, just I would like to mention a few, like Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Iraqi insurgents, they have enjoyed a tremendous support throughout the Arab world. However, when we look at the data evaluating their performance and their popularity within their own societies, there is a process of gradual delegitimization. Also, Arab public opinion rejects violent operations against Iraqis and Palestinians. That has been established. Majorities in Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, and Egypt display clearly that these attacks are unacceptable, and they label them as terrorist acts. Also, there is a declining support for violent acts against Israeli and American civilians. And this is, I think, is an interesting thing, and it's a new development in public opinion in the region. The evidence that we will go through basically targeting the baseline attitudes of declining support, and then we will see the impact of on that on a growing uncertainty and increased condemnation of these organizations. This baseline survey was taken in 2004 in these countries, and the data presented here represents national samples in these countries. There are also other samples representing the economic elite, media elite, and university students. But here, just for the national sample, I think it makes more sense to present that as representing the public at large. What we see here, this is the percentage of people defining these organizations as resistance organizations. For example, in Jordan, Hamas is defined by 87% as a legitimate resistance organization, 84% for Hezbollah, and 67% for Al-Qaeda. Now, that is not the case in Syria. But one interesting thing about Syria, we have only 8% defining this as a resistance organization, Al-Qaeda as a resistance organization, but 49% of Syrian respondents chose the answer, don't know. So we have to be careful in reading this figure. And also, if we look at the other countries, and Lebanon is the interesting case where it is the lowest among all other countries considering Hamas as a legitimate resistance organization. However, I want to go through the changes that took place since 2004. Now, this data is from Jordan. Unfortunately, we could not uncover data from other countries measuring the same item. But here in Jordan, from 2004 to 2005, there are two things we notice in this chart. One, declining numbers of people are defining Hamas as legitimate resistance organization. And that decline is translated into two things. One, uncertainty noticed by the increase in numbers of people who chose don't know from 9 to 15 to 19. That is quite high. And also, the smallest percentage in change of those people who consider the organization as a terrorist organization from 1.6 to 6 to 8%. So that is the first trend. That trend applies also to Hezbollah, but we'll come to that later. Now, within in Palestine, this data presents the Hamas popularity between April, June, and September 2006. The question was, if new legislative elections were held today, which bloc would you vote for? Look at, for example, Hamas from 50% to 37% to 31%. That is a significant decline in Hamas's popularity, while Fatah remained almost constant. While Ismail Haniyeh, who is the prime minister, the Palestinian prime minister representing Hamas, also his popularity, job approval, declined from 64% to 57% to 39%. These are, by all means, are statistically significant differences, and they do represent a major shift in Palestinian public opinion. Again, the Jordanian public opinion is also presents that significant shift. Now, another trend that we have uncovered, if you look at this trend line, the black line, there is a decline in the percentage of people who support violence against Israeli civilians. There are, of course, fluctuations in that, and there are certain contextual factors that affect polling data, but the general trend is actually one of decline. And that is also uncovered in other places. We'll come to that later. Hezbollah, the same trend that we saw applying to Hamas is applying to Hezbollah in Jordan. And with one difference, that the number of people who say don't know or uncertain people to define their attitudes towards Hezbollah is also increasing in a higher numbers than with Hamas. Now, this is in Lebanon, like support for Hezbollah. How do recent events affect your opinion of the following politicians? That was asked about all Lebanese politicians. This represents Hezbollah. Total percent of all Lebanese people, 50%, they said the recent events changed or affected their views of Nasrallah positively. But the interesting thing that we keep in mind here is the Sunnis, 50% of the Sunnis that said their attitudes were affected positively by the recent. And that we will come to later when we discuss regime legitimacy. Now, what is this basically uncovering? It's uncovering something interesting. Like in Egypt, for example, 75% approved of Hezbollah's actions in abducting the Israeli soldiers. that is compared to 54% in Lebanon. And that the poll in Lebanon was conducted between 18th and the 25th of September, just a recent one. So the Egyptians are approving more of Hezbollah actions than the Lebanese themselves. And the same poll in Egypt that was conducted by Ibn Khaldun Center asked 30 leaders in the region, and who is the most influential or the most important in the region. Hassan Nasrallah topped the list with 82%, followed by Ahmadinejad, 73%, and then Khalid Mash'al of Hamas, 60%, then Bin Laden, 52%, then Mahdi Aqif, who is the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood movement in Egypt, with 54%. Percent. So the trend is quite clear that it is more of support for Islamic trends in the region, but that will definitely change at the level of the society concerned, like in Palestine or in Lebanon. In Palestine, for example, 69% said that Hezbollah's performance is better than Hamas' performance. But in general, in Jordan, in Palestine, and Egypt, support for Hezbollah is much higher than among the Lebanese people themselves. Why is that happening? Public opinion supports defiant positions, and I think these Hezbollah, Hamas, Ahmadinejad, and others, they represent that kind of attitude or trend. Now, there's an argument also about people supporting someone who stands up to the American and Israeli policies in the region. And that position, they would support that position as long as they are not paying for it. As long as it's happening in the neighbor's backyard, okay, we are fine with it. But when it's in our backyard, we'll have to reconsider and think that critically. With Al-Qaeda, situation actually is much more interesting than it is for Hamas and Hezbollah. This data from Jordan, you remember in 2004, 67% defined Al-Qaeda as resistance organization. That number in 2005 declined to 20% and then rose up again to 26% in 2006. However, the decline is quite clear. Al-Qaeda after Amman's attacks, I think it's lost its standing among the Jordanian public. At least the overwhelming majority of the Jordanian public lost confidence in Al-Qaeda. Now, the trend, again, is a growing of the number of people defining Al-Qaeda as a terrorist organization, almost 50%. And the uncertainty also is increasing. Now, this is the something interesting about uncertain people, because these people could go either way, depending on the context, depending on the factors affecting their opinions at the time of the polling. Now, the other approach or the other element in defining terrorism and attitudes towards terrorism, we asked about several acts, whether these acts are terrorist acts or not terrorist acts. What we find here, there is a unified attitude almost in the five countries that U.S. operations in Iraq, U.S. military operations in Iraq, and Israeli attacks on Palestinian civilians are seen as terrorist attacks by the overwhelming majority of people. The lowest in Lebanon, 64% for U.S. operations in Iraq. The World Trade Center attacks, for example, 35%, that data in 2004, 35% defined it as a terrorist attack, while in Syria and Lebanon, 71 and 70. Now, the other point here is that operations on civilians inside or attacks on civilians inside Israel, they are not seen by the majority as terrorist attacks. And also on settlements in the West Bank and Gaza Strip are not seen as terrorist attacks by the majority, and also on U.S. forces in Iraq. Now, few of these, we have data to compare over time, and these are trends from Jordan. What we notice that there's an increase of the number who define operations against U.S. forces in Iraq as terrorists, from 18% to 21% in 2005 to 2007. And this is a statistically significant difference, so that means there's a significant change on the ground. And also, if you look at the percentages defining killing Israeli civilians inside Israel as terrorist attacks or terrorist acts, this is increasing from 24% to 49% to 40%. Now, the decline in the 40% here, because the poll was taken around the same time when the Israeli forces shelled Gaza Beach, when that girl was lamenting her family loss, and it was all over the news. The World Trade Center attacks, the percentage of people who define them as terrorist attacks rose from 35% to 61% to 62%, almost doubled. And these changes altogether are significant changes in public opinion in the region. Algeria also, just around the three-quarters of Algerians disapprove of World Trade Center attacks. Targeting civilians in Iraq. In a question that we asked the Arab Barometer, armed groups are justified in attacking civilians in Iraq in order to resist American occupation. Majorities, overwhelming majorities in Kuwait, Palestine, and Jordan disagree with that. There is a growing trend across the region not to target civilians. And that is clearly apparent in the when you ask about Israeli and American civilians. Now, why is this shift taking place in public opinion? There are factors that are underpinning this gradual process of gradual delegitimization. One of them, at the Palestinian level, is the limited positive results, if at all. What did Hamas do so far? Hezbollah. The majority of the Lebanese people think that the war destroyed their country. It was unnecessary, and it hurt their economy. Also, the targeted policies by these organizations like Hamas and Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda are not changing. So persistence of these policies by the American, by the Americans or the Israelis or other countries, including the Arab countries, Egypt and Jordan, Saudi Arabia and others, are not changing. They are still there. So now there is a growing tendency that, well, maybe we need to rethink these attitudes in supporting these organizations. Also, it is more than that. Now there is a debate about security versus democracy and the human rights in the region. Now, people, Democrats, who would like to advance the cause of democracy in the region, human rights, etc., they feel threatened by state policies that are giving security a more important value over democracy and the human rights. What are the implications for regimes' legitimacy in the region? Now we know that there is a strategic realignment in the region, the 6+2, the Gulf States, Jordan, Egypt. Now that represents mainly Sunni states versus Iran, and that the whole idea of the emerging coalition, emerging alliance, emerging bloc, whatever you want to name it, but it is targeting Iran. There is a consensus that Iran constitutes a threat to these countries, and therefore, now Iran, Syria, they do support Hamas, Hezbollah. Now, the regime's legitimacy comes to question. Who will win the battle? Will regimes gain from that process if Iran is delegitimized in the region? And if Iran does not manage to get its way in the region, then regimes might win. But if Iran does, then I think the alternative is quite obvious, that movements will win and will gain more support while the regimes will lose. Now, the other interesting thing about this is the movements, they do raise expectations to extremely high levels. We will do things, as they say, that no one else can do. Liberate Palestine, liberate Iraq, get rid of tyrant regimes, all this discourse. Now, when it comes to reality, measuring by acts, by progress, nothing really has been done. So that brings, again, the issue into question. There are also historical parallels to this. What Nasser did, for example, on raising expectations. Saddam Hussein raised expectations. Now Hassan Nasrallah raised expectations. But is it really delivering to the people? I think there is a consensus that not much has been delivered to the ordinary citizen in the region, and therefore that will continue to delegitimize these movements' causes, unless something that we cannot account for now happens. Implications for political realism. Now, what has been growing, actually, in the region, that there's more people supporting peace deals with Israel. For example, 67% of the Palestinians in a recent poll that was published 2 weeks ago favor immediate resumption of negotiations with Israel. 43% of Lebanese support peace deal with Israel. 56% of Jordanians favor of negotiations between the Palestinians and the Israelis. So there's a growing realization among the public that something has to be done. We have lost a lot. Maybe this is the rationale, and we cannot afford to lose more. Support for perceptibility of extreme organizations like Al-Qaeda, the question is, would lack of legitimacy for Hamas, Hezbollah, or gradual delegitimization of these groups translate into higher level of support for Al-Qaeda or more recruits to go for Al-Qaeda instead, because that organization would meet their expectations or meet their demands? Yet we will have to see this, but I think in principle that the broader Arab public opinion, greater loss of confidence in these organizations, maybe a small number of people would would follow Al-Qaeda and similar organizations, but we cannot be sure of that until we have harder evidence. What are the implications for like-minded movements in the region? If Hamas, Hezbollah fail to deliver in their own societies, what would that mean to the Jordanian Islamic Action Front Party, the Muslim Brotherhood movement in Egypt? Maybe it would mean also a gradual delegitimization of their causes. And also, now, they have so far, for example, in Jordan, the Muslim Brotherhood movement occupy it has 16% of seats in parliament. In Egypt, it's around 20% of seats in parliament. So even with success of Hamas and Hezbollah, still they have quite a long way to go to command more popular vote. What are the implications for regional conflicts? As public opinion is turning more moderate at home, but more radical with respect to other countries, but people may be more likely to support others or other people's insurgencies. And that is actually is what we have seen so far from the evidence, higher support for Hamas, Hezbollah in Egypt, in Jordan, Palestine, than in their own countries. And that might empower radicals in conflicts with regional audiences, especially in Palestine and Iraq, because these conflicts, they do appeal to larger audience in the region, and maybe they will command more support throughout the region. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mattis has agreed to take questions. My general three rules are in effect, which is that please ask one question, please ask it in the form of a question, and please identify yourself when you ask it.
Thank you very much. My name is Hassan Barai from USIP. And my question to my friend Faris is about the your assumption that there might be a gradual delegitimization of the Muslim Brotherhood in Jordan. And I would appreciate if you can define what you mean by delegitimization, because I think their legitimacy is taken for granted. So can you just add a little bit, because I'm quite confused about this point? Thank you.
Okay. When I refer to delegitimization, I refer to supporters to these movements. In Jordan, our polls show that between 1995 and 2006, on average, the Islamic Action Front Party appeals to around 10% of adult population. That would mean, because 40 to 50% don't go to the votes, that will increased to 20%. Now, nearly between 89 and 2003 elections, we have almost the same number of seats in parliament, or the same percentage of seats in parliament for the Islamic Action Front Party. Now, there are 2 points here. One is the delegitimization of discourse. If Hamas goes ahead with the either way, if Hamas fails or succeeds, the backbone of their political discourse in Jordan about Palestine and regional issues, I think, will be diminished largely, because the leading organization in Palestine, which is a sister organization in a way or another, has changed course. Therefore, there would be it wouldn't make sense to the larger public to support such a policy. That's one. The second is that internally, the Islamic Action Front Party, in case that Hamas fails to deliver, which is what we see now, then people maybe would rethink supporting the Islamic Action Front Party in terms of policies that are affecting their daily lives, because there is a political context that if this movement does not abide by or does not become part of the political agreed rules of the political game, then it is outside the system, at least in terms of perception. I hope that explains.
Yeah, in
No, actually, all these surveys, they are conducted face-to-face interviews on national samples, and usually these samples are stratified multi-stage cluster samples. Only in Lebanon, there is a different methodology because the Lebanese system doesn't have really a comparable frame, sampling frame, as in Jordan, Palestine, or Egypt. No, actually, we conduct surveys in other Arab countries. Now we have survey in Morocco in the field, in Algeria in the field, Saudi Arabia. We are just waiting for to get approval. In Kuwait, we managed to do the survey. Now we are trying to expand the surveys to all possible Arab countries. Maybe we will go into Yemen, hopefully, in a few months' time. There are, of course, political difficulties. In some countries, you will have to wait for a long time to get a permission, and they will have to explain every single letter in the questionnaire to the concerned authorities. That's, but we live with that. We try very hard, and we live with it. We managed to do. Of course, we did not get all what we want all the times. In certain countries, we had to omit a whole battery of a questionnaire just in order to get the questionnaire going. Now I think it's a growing process, and I think it's adding to social science research in the region, and we hope that we will be able to continue the process. Actually, in Jordan, immediately after Hamas won the elections, the leaders of the Islamic Action Front Party came public saying, "We are ready to govern." Then it was it caused a bit of a political problem in Jordan. What do you mean by that? The government began asking questions about that. But I think they are trying to. My own observations, of course, this is not supported by hard evidence. But I think they are using the rise of Hamas to their own advantage. And I think the interesting thing to think about here is, what if Hamas fails after the political capitalization on Hamas win? Now Hamas fails, so what? Does that really affect their chances in their local societies or not? We'll have to see. I don't know. Yes, I'm aware of the poll that you're talking about, which was conducted by the IRI in Morocco, and it talked about a majority that will vote for the Justice and Development Party, I think, right?
PJD.
PJD. And actually, it depends on what sort of a question you ask. In Jordan, if you ask different questions, you will get different answers for popularity. Our questions, for example, when you ask what political party comes closest to represent your social, political, and economic aspirations, then you will get lower numbers, or the lowest, because that will be a determined voter, determined loyal person to the party that would give you the answer. If you ask, generally speaking, what political trend you would vote for, the Islamist trend, for example, that would change the answer, and you would get higher numbers for that. I remember when the poll was published, many Moroccan officials came public, and they were dismissing the results of the poll. But I'm not sure, actually, whether the party will win the elections, because still we will have to see maybe further evidence of that. Now we are conducting, we have a survey in the field in Morocco, and we are asking a question about political parties. Hopefully we'll get some data to compare. And the other thing is, if you ask eligible voters, it's quite different when you ask, if you take the number among eligible voters or actual voters. It makes a big difference in what percentage you get of for this party or that party. So I really cannot make a concrete scientific prediction on this, but hopefully in a month or so we'll have data to compare.
Well, the congressional Republicans will do poorly in Morocco.
Larry Velty, National Defense University. Faris, this is an unfair question for you, and also one does not lend itself to scientific prediction. Your trend lines were kind of favorable, at least from the American perspective up there. This is an unfair question, but you might get it when you get to Capitol Hill. What could happen to reverse those trend lines? How could we screw it up?
Well, I think it's a tough question. Now, maybe the question would, what got these numbers as high as they are, and then the trend began to decline? I think it's obviously the policy on Palestine and the policy on Iraq. These issues. Now, we have to be very clear about two things. One, that people, when they vote, they don't vote on foreign policy issues that is in Jordan. We have the hard evidence for that. They vote on bread and butter issues. But when you separate political issues from economic issues, internal and from external issues, Palestine and Iraq top the list of political external issues. When you combine all like five items together, like poverty, unemployment, corruption, Palestine, Iraq, and support for democracy or enhancing democracy, you will get the order in terms of priority, poverty, unemployment, corruption, Palestine, Iraq, democracy. You will get poverty, unemployment, and corruption taking up to 75 to 80% of people. As they define these as their a priority. Second, first and second the priorities. Now, that maybe if the trend is if the trend continues, I mean, in terms of attitudes only, not necessarily these attitudes do not necessarily translate into political action, and we have seen that. Had people voted according to their attitudes, declared attitudes, we would have seen maybe 67% in Jordan voting for in the last elections for extreme radical Islamists, but that did not happen. The total votes that the Islamists got in the elections were 12.5% of the total actual vote cast. So it's one thing to declare an attitude, and it's totally another to act on that attitude. Now, attitudes might continue to be as critical as they are, especially with the continuation of the current policies. What might reverse or decrease the level of animosity towards policy, maybe a change of course. I mean, if the course of action is changed, then might have some changes at the attitudes level. However, there is one extra point I'd like to make is we uncovered also in our surveys that people define political issues as their major points of disagreement with the United States. They do not define cultural values or democracy or other values. In a question that we asked about, these are 12 values. We gave our respondents in the five countries and 20 different samples in these five countries. What is the most important value you think the American people care about? The French and the British, and then your own society, the Jordanian or the Egyptian. Individual liberty came number one. Second, wealth. And third, pursuit of knowledge. These are the perceptions and the public mind in the region. Now, the interesting thing is, religion, which was one of the values that were listed, did not show. It's 2.5% said religion is important to Americans and British and French people. So the major point of reference, I think, it is political rather than cultural. So... but actually, one also might project the parallel argument that if the U.S. withdraws from Iraq, that will boost the legitimacy of the camp of political realism in the region. That is the Gulf states, Jordan, Egypt, and Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia. And that will give them the upper hand in fighting these movements. It's simple. Now, If you look at the events in the region since 1990 until today, whenever there's a crisis in the region, the Americans would come to the Arabs and tell them, okay, we will solve the Arab-Israeli conflict. Basically, watering their mouths, and then they will agree to it. In 1992, it happened. In 2003, with the Iraq war, it happened. Now, maybe in 2007, it will happen with Iran. And at the end, after a year or two, what was given as a bulk will be taken in pieces, and then the Arab-Israeli conflict remains unresolved. Now, these countries, these regimes, or what so-called moderate regimes, they need something to show to the public. They need something tangible from, we are the friends of the United States. This is what they have been arguing all, and we can exert some pressure on the United States in order to solve the problem. Now, the problem hasn't been resolved. So they need something to show to the people. Otherwise, maybe they will, they're loss of legitimacy, given the democratic deficit in the region, will increase. I mean, yes. Actually, yes, you are right. If you conduct a poll now asking about whether Iran constitutes a security threat to your existential security, you'll find maybe an overwhelming majority of Arabs in the region say, no, it doesn't. Who constitutes? It's Israel, the United States. And that actually was done a year ago by Shibli Telhami, and he conducted the surveys in the United Arab Emirates and some Gulf and Morocco, Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon. And 60% of respondents said that Iran does not constitute existential a threat to their existential security. The argument that public opinion doesn't matter in the region, I think, if you look at it as it happened so far, as things took place so far, no, it doesn't. It doesn't really matter, because at the end of the day, the state security forces, the regime, the state, is much stronger than any other group in the society. And in a region, we live in strong states as opposed vis-a-vis their own societies and weak societies vis-a-vis their own states. Other thing is, of course, political action, like in terms of protest action, is so limited in the region. I mean, the highest number that we got, 17% of adult Palestinians took some sort of action in protesting the war in Lebanon, and the highest was in Gaza. I think it was around 20% in the region. So, I mean, that is very, very, very small number. But one also will have to rethink the assumptions. Now, the assumptions are, we are assuming here that foreign policy and regional politics determines voters' behavior or individuals' behavior. This is not the case. Actually, voting behavior is determined by materialist needs of the public rather than their attitudes on gay marriage or the environment or any or the foreign policy. So I don't think that is, I don't think it would cause a serious trouble for any of these regimes. Iraq, I mean, maybe the people would not care as much about Iran as much as they cared about Iraq, but nothing really happened. So,
can I ask you about how opinions get formed? And I'm especially interested in the sort of breakdown interaction between formal and informal media. And that is, there's a satellite television world which brings people news about Palestine and about Iraq, which plays some role in shaping opinion. There's a world of what they call gray literature, pamphlets and video cassettes and CDs that people trade. Other ways that people share information at mosques and other places of gathering. I mean, how do we think about this space of opinion formation in terms of these trends, and how is that space changing as the media changes, as people pay attention to a more diverse array of inputs?
Actually, it depends on the topic. If the topic is political views on democracy, for example, I think people, what I can tell you that overwhelming majority in Jordan, in Algeria, in Egypt, in Morocco, in Kuwait, in Palestine, in Lebanon, they do support a democratic political system, and they would like to have a democratic political system. Now, how this attitude is formed, maybe it is by looking at other examples of democratic politics. For example, in Jordan, people, when asked about Israel, whether Israel is a democratic state or not, on a scale of from 1 to 10, between 7 and 8, where 10 means it's democratic, between 99 and 2006 would say Israel is a democratic state, despite the political animosity they have towards Israel. The same for the United States and other countries. No, actually, for the United States is higher, but almost the same, yeah.
I saw a poll that said it was higher, and the explanation I received is that people say that American politics are corrupted because Israel controls American politics. Israel actually controls Israeli politics, and therefore it's more democracy.
No, actually, this trend has been really consistent since 1999 until 2006. I mean, that the United States tops the list, and then Israel, then Lebanon, then Jordan, then Egypt, and you go down to Saudi Arabia, Iraq. These are not perceived as democratic countries. So it depends on the actual experience. One example that when we did the Revisiting the Arab Street book, we looked at Al Jazeera factor, whether Al Jazeera really has an impact on forming Arab public opinion. Now, our conclusion was that actually Al Jazeera mostly is responding to what is already deep-seated of values in the region rather than making them or forming them. It is a response to these attitudes and reinforcing these attitudes rather than making them, at least when it comes to political perceptions of the West or of the political system of the West or their own societies. And the example is, we asked the question about, can you summarize your views about the United States in one sentence statement? Now, the most frequent answer was repression. Repression and colonialism. The same for Britain, but with lower numbers. For France, it's beauty and democracy, the most frequently repeated answer. So these people, they are exposed to the same news channels and the same media outlets, but they have a favorable view of France and not favorable view of Britain and the United States. So it is politics that determines their attitudes. I cannot give you an expert opinion on the impact of the media on forming opinions and other issues, because that needs a lot of research. I didn't do that.
After the war, the recent war in Lebanon, Saadeddin Ibrahim of Ibn Khaldun Center wrote an article. It was published in the Washington Post. He was talking about the next generation, about the next Arab generation. He predicted that the next generation would be more religious, more angry, more frustrating against the United States. In general, what do you say about the next generation, especially with the comparison with statistics you showed us, that the hateness or all this are disagrees?
Okay. One interesting result that we found when we compared young people in Palestine and in Jordan, we found that on the questions of defining Al-Qaeda, for example, as a legitimate resistance organization or a terrorist organization, that the Palestinian youth, they were the lowest in defining Al-Qaeda as a terrorist organization compared to the Jordanian, the Egyptian, the Syrians, and the Lebanese. So that is... maybe there is a political context that explains why the Palestinian youth are more favorable of Al-Qaeda than the Jordanian youth or others. But I think patterns of religiosity in the region are very high. If you ask a question like, what of the following best describes you? Above all, I'm a Muslim. Above all, I'm an Arab. Above all, I'm a Jordanian or a Palestinian or what? You will find two-thirds to three-quarters of the people defining as, above all, I'm a Muslim. Now, that, when it comes to, would that really translate into political action or translate into a behavior in life? I think the evidence would suggest it's too little. The translation of this attitude to a political act is minimal. However... I think the levels of religiosity that we uncovered in using questions like lottery, people would tell you that 75% above all are Muslim. But when you ask them about would you buy a lottery ticket, which is perceived as haram, forbidden, you can't buy it, 25% will surely buy, and maybe two-thirds will buy, whether surely or maybe. But two-thirds will buy a ticket. So, I mean, there is this attitude versus behavior dichotomy in public opinion. And I think if you look at the impact of religiosity measured by objective religiosity or subjective religiosity and attitudes, you will not find much difference, actually, because I think the major ideas or the major arguments are political ones and determined by political issues rather than religious issues.
In all your discussion, you didn't mention at all at any time the economic impact on their response, on the response to any question. The economy and the way to subside and make a good living and have aspirations.
A very interesting question, actually. You might be surprised. I was showing John the other day some data on elites, economic elites, media elites, students, and national samples. For example, when you look at the percentage of people, the business community in Jordan, defining Hamas as a legitimate business organization, it hasn't changed despite the change that we see among the public. The media didn't change, despite the change that we see in among the public at large. I think we are talking about when we talk about business elite, we are talking about CEOs and general directors of companies. So we're not talking about mid-level management or and these people they do have. And however, I think there are also other qualitative evidence to suggest the contrary. people now, like in the, I read an article in the Washington Post written by, forget his name, about 10 million Saudis marching to the streets of Riyadh, 2 million somewhere else. Why? To protest the war in Lebanon? No, to buy stocks. Now, to buy shares. I don't know would the, if that would translate into a larger political movement. I don't know really.
My question is really, besides being the CEO, the concern of the economy of people being able to make a living, and if I go back to the history of 1993, when there were the hope of the peace in the Middle East and an Eisenstadt program to develop the economy of the Middle East, and it, the euphoria was great for looking at the future of being able to have a normal life and be more focused on making a good living.
Mm-hmm.
And religion was not a factor, and politics were not a factor anymore. But really was the ability of creating jobs in the Middle East was changing actually the whole Middle East state of mind.
When we conducted the poll about Washington Declaration between Jordan and Israel, and the people who supported the declaration, when we asked them about why do you support it, the majority of them talked about economic reasons. Because I remember myself in mid-90s, headlines in the papers and TV all the time that we will change our lives. That's it. We got to the end of poverty and now we are moving to a new era of prosperity. Of course, this didn't happen and people are definitely disappointed with that. I really can't make scientific predictions whether that would be the major factor driving people into the peace process or out of the peace process. But we know for sure that the majority of people would vote and would behave on bread and butter issues. Now, if that comes with the peace process, then it is legitimate maybe in economic terms. If it comes with something else, then that would be legitimate. I think that is the maybe the way one would look at it. Yes, actually, there are differences. The older the person is, the less likely that person would define Al-Qaeda, for example, as a legitimate resistance organization. So the older, the wiser the pattern is. And you can see a lot of evidence in a book that we published called Revisiting the Arab Street Research from Within, and we broke down all these trends by age and education. Yes, education does have an impact. The higher the level of education, the less likely an individual would define Al-Qaeda as a legitimate resistance organization.
Thank you very much for your attention. You know where to find Fattis. He is with us for as long as we can keep him. Thank you very much for attending, for a very interesting set of questions, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Tom.